We are holding on Kufyud Gimel Amud Beis, the sixth line of the medium-sized lines. Line begins Kvetre. Continuing on the piece of Agadta that we were talking about, we had different pieces of advice for life that the Chachamim were giving their Talmidim or their children. The last couple of them involved was that they were telling them three pieces of advice. So therefore, the Gemara now starts off with some threes and then some fours and fives and so forth. So the Gemara starts off. There are three kinds of people where their life is not a life because, in other words, they have such a hard time with it that it's like their life is almost like not worth living. Harachmonin, people who are too rachmonistic, people who are too merciful. And we're not talking, obviously, rachmim is a Jewish trait, but we're talking about somebody who is overly so. Avaraschanin, and people who get over angry. Va'anine adas, and people who are over fastidious, people who are over picky about their food or about anything else around them. So the point is that Rashbam says those are things you have them constantly. A person is makbid on those things. So like a person who has these midas never has any rest. They never have any calmness in their life because there's always something to set them off in one of these three things. But Amar Rav Yosef kulu isnu bi. So Rav Yosef says I have all of those traits. Now why taka does Rav Yosef have all of those traits? Ben Yehoyada says actually Rav Yosef was blind. So therefore, what happens is when a person is blind and they can't see what's happening around them, their imagination works over time. So for example, you hear somebody yelling about something. If you are able to see, then you're able to take a look. Okay, you know, you're able to put it in perspective. What they're yelling about, whether, you know, they're hurt, for example, is not quite so serious. But if you're blind, then your mind conjures up all kinds of terrible scenarios why the person is screaming over there, and therefore you have much more rachmanis on him, and therefore that makes you feel much worse than you otherwise would. And the same thing with the other two.
See the one in the Mishnayos that says, "Isn't this honey?"
Istin, first of all, Rabbi Yosef is an Amora, so he wouldn't be in Mishnayos. No, Istinus Ani is Rabbi Gamliel in Mishnayos Brachas. Istinus and Anine Adas, I guess, are a little bit related. I mean, Istinus means a delicate person. Anine Adas means a fastidious person, like a person where every little thing makes them nauseated or disgusted or whatever. That's not quite the same thing, although I guess there is a certain relationship. But anyway, that was Rabbi Gamliel. Okay. Turn it up on Shloisha Sonin Zeh. There are three creatures that hate each other. The Elohim, and they are as follows: a klovim, dogs, in other words, dogs hate each other, Vatanagolin and chickens, Vahavarin and Chavarin, which is a group among the Persians. They were a separate nation among the Persians, or they were the Persian priests or whatever. And we find in a number of places in the Gemara that they harassed harassed Jews. So the Gemara is saying over here, they also, not only they don't like Jews, they don't like each other either. V'yesh omim af ha-zonus, some say also zonus. And here's a surprising one. V'yesh omim af tamir chachamim shem b'bavel, some say also the tamir chachamim in Bavel. Now, what does that mean? I mean, that the tamir chachamim in Bavel hate each other. So the Gemara in Kedushin tells us that when tamir chachamim are arguing and debating among themselves, they look like they hate each other. But in the end, nasu oyevim zelozeh, because they're doing it l'shem shemayim, then they end up underneath it all, and you find in the end that they're friends to each other because they accept what they accept and they reconcile with what the other person is saying. So in Bavel they had more of that than in Eretz Yisrael, because the Gemara mentions in a few places, particularly in Sanhedrin, that in Bavel they were much more combative when it came to learning Torah. There was much more of the arguing and I'm trying to slug you up, and so on and so forth, much more combative than in Eretz Yisrael, where they were much more gentle about it and not so much given to trying to slug each other up. The next Masechta after this, we're going to learn a Shkolim, which comes from Yerushalmi, so we'll have, I guess, an opportunity to see that over there. Anyway, The Maharal talks about it in one of his Sfarim and Nesivas Olam, and he explains along these lines that each of these first few ones that we mentioned, dogs and chickens and whatever, are all like very lowly creatures, and therefore they hate each other. Whereas with the Chachamim, we're not saying they truly hate each other; we're saying that they just the opposite, because they're very exalted creatures, the opposite of the other ones. Therefore, like they have a hard time just accepting at face value. You said something. Okay, I accept it. No, you know, we got to argue about it because that's Milchamta Shel Torah. But in the end, unlike the other ones, they become friendly with each other because they're doing it L'Shem Shemayim. Next, Tanan Rabbanan, Shloisha Oyhavin Zeseh. On the other hand, there were three kinds of people or three kinds of creatures that love one another, because again, they're all very degraded, and therefore like they love each other in order to help each other out. Elohein HaGerim. Gerim, because Gerim usually have a hard time in life, so they tend to stick together. Va'avodim, and slaves. Va'ovim, and ravens. Next, Arba'a Ein Adas Sevlosan. There are four creatures where the human mind can't, the people can't stand them. People can't stand that such people should exist. And Rashi actually adds that not only people, the Rashbam says, just it means that people can't stand that such people should exist. Rashi says even they themselves eventually have a conscience and realize that I'm acting wrongly, and they feel themselves to be very degraded. Elohein, Dal Geya, a poor person who's proud, but Osher Mechachesh, a rich person who denies a loan that you lent him, or something that you owe, that he owes you, or whatever. So in other words, a poor person, you can understand. It's not right for him to deny a loan or whatever, but you can kind of understand he's poor, and therefore he figures he's going to get out of it. And a rich person, it's natural for him to be proud. But the other way around, that a poor person should be proud, and that a rich person should be denying debts that he owes, that's Ein Adas Sevlosan. People can't bear, people can't stand that such people should exist. The third one, Vizokin Menayef, an old person who commits adultery. So again, if he's younger, then it's not right, but it's understandable. But when he's old, he has less of a taiva anyway. What's he doing that kind of thing? And the fourth one, Uparnas Misgar, Alat Sibur Bechinam, the fourth one is a leader of the community who exalts and prides himself over the community for nothing, meaning, in other words, that Rashbam explains, he acts as I'm the leader, I'm the president, I'm the whatever, you know, you have to respect me. But then when they actually need his help, then he's nowhere to be found. So that's nobody can stand that kind of person. The Yesh Omim, there's a fifth one. Afa Megarishas Ishtei Pam Rishonu Shniyo Machzira. Also, a man who divorces his wife a first time, then he remarries her, and then divorces her a second time, and then remarries her again. Like, haven't you already learned your lesson? She's obviously not for you. But the Tanakama doesn't add that to his list, because he says, after all, you know, it's not necessarily Ein Adas Sevlosan. Zimna de Ksubasa Meruba. It could happen. Her Ksuba is very large. So therefore, each time he divorces her, and then he realizes, look, you know, in the end, I'm not going to be able to pay her Ksuba. So he has no choice but to remarry her. Or another possibility, he might have already children with her. So he's not able to stay divorced from her. Because Rachmanas on the kids, you want them to grow up with two parents. So therefore, the Tanakhama doesn't list this, but the Yeshayim lists this as well. Next, Chamisha Dvorim Tziva Knan Asbonov. Knan gave the following five instructions to his children. Now, Knan is, you have Avodim Knanim, or descended from Knan, not biologically, not every Eved Knani is descended from Knan, but by and large they are, because Eved Avodim Yilachov. But the Rashbam explains, we don't mean that literally Knan gave these five instructions to his children, but it's so common, these traits that we're going to mention among Avodim, that it's as if like Knan, the ancestor of all the Avodim, gave them instructions to be like this. And they are, number one, Ehavu Zeseh, love one another. Like we said before, Avodim are one of the three categories of people who love each other. The Ehavu is a Gezel, love stealing, because that's a stereotype that Avodim like to steal. The Ehavu is a Zima, and love being promiscuous, being Mizaneh, same idea. The Sinu is Sandei Nechem, hate your masters. The Alta Dabru Emes, and never speak the truth. And those kinds of things are so common among Avodim that it's as if Knan had actually given instructions to his children to be like this for all time. Next, Shisha Dvarim Ne'amorim Besus. There are six things that the Chachamim said, six derogatory things about a horse. Oyev es hasnus, it loves znus, it loves being promiscuous. This a horse is not one of those creatures that mates for life. It'll just mate with whichever, with a male horse will just mate with whichever female one is available. The oyev es hamelchama, it loves war. The ruchay gasa, it's very proud of itself, of its appearance and whatever. Umoyas es hashena, it hates sleeping. You have in halacha, we say that if a person sleeps more than the amount a horse sleeps at a time, then they need to wash negovasa, which the Gemara says is 60 breaths. You have a machlokas aposkim, how much that is. The accepted halacha is that it's a half hour, because horses only sleep for short periods of time at a time. The Gemara tells us that David HaMelech would do the same kind of thing. Anyway, that's the fourth thing. And the last two, the oichel harbe, a horse eats a lot, umoitzi kima, and it produces very little waste. So those are the six things. On the side it brings another one, mahalach al tzidei drachim. It walks by the sides of the roads, like out of pride, like it won't walk in the middle. It'll walk davka on the sides, like it's high, like it's better than everybody else. In that case, Oichel Habi and Moitzi Kima would be counted as one. The Yesh Omim, and then there's a Yesh Omim, Af Mavakash Laharik Ba'olav V'mochama, also a horse tries to kill its owner in war. Now, how does it do that? The Yerushalmi, I think, explains, either what it is, for example, during war, it's busy looking for a mate. So meanwhile, you know, you're trying to use it to run away, or you're trying to use it to attack the enemy. And meanwhile, it's attracted to the enemy's female horses, let's say, or that it stays in one place because it's busy eating while you want it to run away or whatever. So therefore, it's trying to kill a person who's riding on it and then trying to use it in war. Next, Shiva Menudin Lashamayim. There are seven people who are like they're in Nidui, they're in Chere Min Hashamayim. Elohein, and they are as follows. Number one, Yehudi She'en Lo Isha, a Jew who doesn't have a wife. Now, really, actually, the original uncensored Gemaras said Mi She'en Lo Isha, a person who doesn't have a wife. But the censors didn't like that. I mean, what does it do, for example, as far as all of their priests? So therefore, the censors forced them to change it to Yehudi. Number two, but anyway, it means a person who doesn't have a wife, because then, you know, he's living, you know, first of all, without, you know, Matzah Isha, Matzah Toiv, and the converse is true, but also like this, you know, he's, as we talked about yesterday, he's exposed to certain kinds of taivus, which now he doesn't have a heterodic outlet for them. The pashtus, obviously, we're meaning where he has the ability to get married and he chooses not to. We're not talking about a person who has been looking for Shidduchim and is unable to find. Number two, v'shiyesh la'isha v'ein le'banim. Number two, if he has a wife and he doesn't have children, again, Tosfos says, doesn't mean, unfortunately, a lot of people don't have children for one reason or another. It means that he bedavka, he's not misasik the period of Arabia. So in other words, he's by choice, he doesn't have children. Number three, u'mishiyesh le'banim v'ein magadlan l'tamad Torah. Number three is a person who has children and he doesn't raise them to learn Torah. Number four, Misha Enle Tfilin Berosha, your Tfilin Bizroyoi. If he doesn't have Tfilin on his arm, on his head or his arm. Now, of course, a person has a mitzvah of putting on Tfilin, but in other words, Tosfos explains one possibility is it means he has Tfilin and he just doesn't bother putting them on. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is even if a person doesn't have them, he's obligated to try and make it that, and he's obligated to try and get a pair of Tfilin or borrow a pair of Tfilin. And to make himself able to put them on. We say tefillin tzrichin guf naki. Fine, you put them on just for the short amount of time for Krishma to be makabel o malchus shemayim. For that amount of time, you can be careful about a guf naki. It's brought that in the times of the Rishonim, actually, there was a period of time when there were many Jews who were getting careless with the mitzvah of tefillin. Rav Moshe Mikutzi, the smag, went on mitzvah tefillin in those days. This is long before the mitzvah tefillin that we're familiar with. And he went around to many different communities explaining to them the importance of tefillin. And many Jews, Taka, started putting them on again. A generation later, the Chinuch explains that many of these people took the view, you know what, it is hard to be careful. After all, doing tefillin, while you're wearing tefillin, you're not allowed to have Pesach Hadas, and you have to have a Guf Naki, and so on and so forth. So therefore, so you have people arguing, which is similar to the way you had people arguing against the Rebbe's Mitzvah Tefillin. How can you be putting on Tefillin on people who don't fully keep mitzvahs? What if they're having Machshavas Zoras during that time? What if they don't have a Guf Naki, etc.? And then the answer is, you know, come on, and you know, mitzvah tefillin is such an important thing. Don't allow such excuses to stop you. The Rebbe expands on it in a couple of his letters and a couple of his sichas that, come on, Dafka, when a person is putting on tefillin and it's a novelty for him, Dafka, then he's going to start having machshavas zoras, that sort of thing. So therefore, yeah, go ahead and encourage people to put on tefillin. And if you're worried about Guf Naki and you're worried about Machshavas Zoras and whatever, then fine. Don't wear them all day like they used to in the olden days. Wear them for a short time, and then it's easy enough to be careful about it during that time. Okay, getting back to the Gemara, another one of mezuzah b'pischai, a person who doesn't have a mezuzah on his door. Same idea, in other words, we could even be talking about a person, according to the different explanations in Tosfos. Are we talking about a person who has the ability to put up a mezuzah and just chooses not to? Or are we talking about even a person who maybe technically their doorway is not chayev in a mezuzah, but it would be easy enough to fix it up that they could actually make it? And I skipped one, but tzitzis bevigdoi, mezuzah bepistoi, also tzitzis on his garment and a mezuzah on his door. Same idea with tzitzis. In other words, is it that we're saying that a person, we're talking about a person who's already wearing a four-cornered garment and he bedavka then chooses not to put tzitzis on it? Or Tosfos mentions, according to the second explanation, that even if he's not actually normally wearing a four-cornered garment, he's obligated to in order to make himself chayev in tzitzis, which is, of course, what we do. Or mezuzah b'pischai, or mezuzah on his door. The next one, and then the seventh one, v'hameneam in olam miraglav, a person who doesn't wear shoes on his feet, the person who keeps off shoes from his feet, which we learned yesterday, a person has to, that a person who goes barefoot is a tremendous gnai. It's a very shameful thing to go without shoes, and a person should sell everything he has and buy shoes. So if a person doesn't do that, then the Gemara says it's like Menudin Lashamayim, the Yesh Omim, and then there's a Yesh Omim Af Mishain Mesev Bachavura Shal Mitzvah. Also a person who doesn't join in and who doesn't join in into a Suda Shal into a Chavura, into a group that's celebrating a Sudas Mitzvah. For example, the Rashbam says a Bris Mila, or when a Bas Koyan is marrying a Koyan, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, is considered a Sudas Mitzvah. Now, Tosfos says, first of all, specifically, we're talking about Tosfos mentions the same ones as the Rashbam does, a Bris Mila and a Sudas Nisurin, where Talmud Chacham is marrying a Bas Koyan. However, Tosfos says that would only be if you know that the people who are there are Erlicha people, because otherwise you have an Indian anyway, that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't be eating by a Suda where he doesn't know what the caliber is of the people who are eating there, and he might end up sitting next to people who don't have who are Rishoyim, who don't have good Midas or whatever. This Gemara, by the way, is the source for that, because a Bris is a Sudas Mitzvah, therefore we don't invite somebody to a Bris, because then if they don't show up, then we're saying you have the consequences that we're saying here in the Gemara, that he's considered Menudah L'Shamayim. So therefore, we only inform people when and where the Bris is, and if they show up, good, and if not, then they're not being over on this. Next, Amar Rav Baba Chana, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Marta, Amar Rav Mishum Rav Yosi Ish Hutzel, Minayin She'en Sholem B'Kaldiyim. How do we know, Kufiyud Gimel Amud Beis, how do we know that you're not allowed to ask Chaldeim about the future? Now, what are Chaldeim? Rashi over here translates that it means Balei Oiv, people who do Oiv magic. The Rashbam says on that, what do you mean? What do you mean? Where does it say? The Pasuk explicitly says, Al Tifnu Ala Oivus. So rather, the Rashbam says it means stargazers, astrologers. And in fact, Rashi himself and a number of other places in Chas also explains Chaldeim that way. Literally, Chaldeim means Chaldeans. That's the name, that's the Greek name of the people of Kastim. You have the Kastim, like Nebuchadnezzar's people. They were, a lot of them were expert stargazers, so that became like the nickname for any stargazer was called a Chaldee. And in Hebrew we call them Kastim, and in Greek they call them Chaldeim. And that became the popular name for them. Anyway, so how do we know that you're not allowed to ask them? Shenema, tomim tia im Hashem alekecha. Because the Pasuk says you should be whole with Hashem. In other words, trust in Hashem. Whatever's going to happen, you don't need to go start asking stargazers and fortune tellers or whatever what's going to be in the future. Just trust that whatever is going to happen is what Hashem planned for you. With that said, a number of the Rishonim say that now you do have, for example, in the Gemara and Shabbat, we learned at the end of Masechta Shabbos, about that you have different things. If a person is born on this day or during this mazel, then they're going to have certain tendencies. And the Gemara mentions over there about, for example, Rabbi Akiva and the wife of Rabbi Nachman Reitzchak, who were told things by stargazers and they were concerned about them. You have Rabbi Akiva was told that his daughter was going to be bitten by a snake on her wedding night, and he was worried about it. And then in the end, she was saved because of tzedakah she did. And Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak's mother was told that her son is going to grow up to be a ganev, and she made sure he's always wearing a yarmulke. So a number of the Mefarshim say that even though we're saying over here in the Gemara, you're not allowed to ask them. First of all, it's not an Aveira too. We're just saying it's Tomim Tia. Although with that said, the Ramban actually lists Tomim Tia Im Hashem Alekecha as an actual mitzvah of the 613 mitzvahs. But anyway, so maybe there's an Aveira in asking them, maybe not. But even if there is, if they tell you, if they volunteer the information, then many of the Mishonim say you are allowed to be choshish for it. So Rabbi Akiva, for example, didn't go to a stargazer to ask him, but a stargazer one day told him this, that your daughter is destined to die of a snake bite on her wedding night. So therefore, once he's told it, then he's concerned about it. And the same thing with Nachum Yitzchak's mother, and the same thing with other examples in the Gemara over there. So not that you go looking for the information, but if it's given to you, then you can act accordingly. Also, Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of this chain of Amiroim, going back to Rabbi Yossi Ish Hutzel, how do we know that if one person knows that a different person is greater than him in even one thing, that is chayev to treat him respectfully? Which Tosfos says means even if he didn't learn Torah from him, if he learned from him, then we have in Pirkei Avos by David and Achitofel, Rabbi Alufim Yudai. But here we're talking about where you know the other person is greater, even if you didn't actually learn from him, you still have to show him covered. Shenemar, you have a pasuk in Daniel talking about where Doyavesh had appointed Daniel as one of his three top ministers, and the pasuk says Kol Kovel Diruach Yatira Bei, because he had a much greater spirit in him. He was much smarter than the other ministers. Umalka Ashis, the king, had the idea Lahakmusa Akomachusa to put him in charge of the whole kingdom. In other words, to make him Mishnah Mamelech. So we see, in other words, that because he was so smart, therefore Doyavesh had Derech Eretz for him and was ready to appoint him as chief minister. So we see from this that if you see that a person is greater, even in one thing, then you have to show him respect. Next, another thing he said in the name of Rabbi Yossi Ishwitzel, Vayeshevas al Dam Tar, a woman who has given birth and now she has for the first 7 or 14 days after the birth, 7 for a boy, 14 for a girl, she's Tamei. After that, you have 33 days for a boy, 66 for a girl, of Dam Tohar, where even if she bleeds, she's considered Tohar, and she and her husband, well, Tohar to the extent that she and her husband are able to have relations. Nowadays, we don't do that, but the Rambam writes that in his times, there were still places that did that. Anyway, so Asur Lashamish, so she's also to have relations after the 40 or 80 days are over. Ad Kama, so the Gemara says, how long? I'm a Rav Oina. So Rav says for one Oina. The point of it is that Ashbam says like this. We're talking about on the night after the 40 or the 80 days. The problem is up until now, she's been used to that she can have relations even though she's bleeding. Now, beginning from tonight, if she bleeds, then she's a Nida or a Zava, as the case may be. Therefore, she and her husband need to stay apart for one oina in order to make a break this way. So this way, she'll remember in the future that if she has a re'iyah, if she has a flow of blood, then she's going to be also to her husband. So Rashi explains oina means a day and a night, means a 24-hour period. The Rashbam says that no, it means one night. Now you actually have, when it comes to the halachas of Taras and Mishpacha, you have that discussion in various contexts. So we have, for example, so when it comes to Oina Beninis, there we hold that it does in fact mean a full 24-hour period. When you have when a woman doesn't have a regular cycle, as most women nowadays don't, then you have one of the times when you need to separate is the Oina Beninis is the 30th day after the previous one, because most women's cycles approximate 30 days. So then we do both a day and a night. And even when it comes to a regular owner, for example, the Hafloga owner and the Vesta Chodesh, so all of those, the mainstream minhag is to just do one day or one night. So for example, if her last period was by night, then if her last period, let's say, was the night going into Beis Nissen, let's say, then the following month, the night going into Beis Ir, then they have to separate. There is a rishon called the Urzarua, who actually holds that even in that case, you need 24 hours. And in fact, they call it the Onas Urzarua. That would be similar to what Rashi's saying over here, that you need a day and a night. Yeah. So they have to have this one Onas separation after the 40 days, right? No. But we're talking about she gave birth. So let's say she had a boy. She has 7 days, which she's tummy, whether she's bleeding or not. After that, the next 33 days, minat Torah, and also midrabanan, she's mutter, even if she's bleeding. The eventually developed the minhag not to rely on that. And we consider that anytime she bleeds, she's tummy to her husband. But in principle, during those 33 days, she is tahor. So now we're saying after that, she needs one oina of a break. Those 30 days, nothing happens because she had her period. Even if she has her period, because it doesn't count, because during the Yumei Toya, right? Okay, onward. So now, who is this Rabbi Yosef Ishutzel? Tana, we learn in a Braisa, who Yosef Ishutzel, who Yosef Ababli, he's also called Yosef Ababli, which, okay, Hutzel is the name of a city in Babel, who Isi ben Gur Aryeh, who Isi ben Yehuda, who Isi ben Gamliel, who Isi ben Mahalalel, he had all these different names, Umashmoy Isi ben Akabia Shmoy. His real name is Isi ben Akabia. So why did he go by so many different names? So either each of these names tells us some different quality about him or about his father, or there's an explanation that he had to run away from the government, and therefore he kept on having to change his name in order to evade the government. Okay, another one. Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavla, Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chachla, Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ila. There's another one who has three names, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavla, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chachla, and Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ila. Told us Tanoim Mamaroim actually brings a girsa that it's actually not all the same person, these three Rabbi Yitzchaks, but rather two different pairs. That Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha is also Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavla, and separately Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chakla is also Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ila, which could be that in that case, for example, Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha would be his profession, he was a smith, and his father's name was Tavla. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chakla, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ila could be ben Chakla, could be where he's from, and ben Ila could be his father's name, or one could be his father's name and one his mother's name, if his mother was a prominent lady in her own right, etc. Next, the next word over here, who Hagoyis Habach takes out because it's a separate thing. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha de Shmaita. When you have a teaching in Halacha, in Gemara, and it just says Rabbi Yitzchak, you should know that that is Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha. Hu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas da Aganta, and when you have in Aganta, it mentions just Rabbi Yitzchak without specifying, then you should know it's Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas. So how do you remember which is which? V'simonach, Shmauni Achai V'rei, V'ami is actually what it should really say, instead of Shimuna Achai V'rei, that says in the Gemara. Shmauni Achai V'ami is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, when David is addressing the Jewish people, so it helps us remember, Shmauni is like the word Shmaita, which means a teaching of Halacha. Achai is like the word Acha, so that helps us remember that Rabbi Yitzchak, when it comes to Shmaita, is Ben Acha. Well, it does, literally, the word Acha means brother. David HaMelech is saying to the people, Shmauni, Achai, V'ami, listen to me, my brothers and my people. What we see, in other words, the Pasuk puts together the word Shmauni and the word Ami, so that the word Achai, so that helps us remember that in Shmaita, it's Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Acha. And then, Shmaita means teachings of halacha. So not the halacha is like him. Whenever in halacha you have something that says Rabbi Yitzchak said such and such in a discussion of halacha in the Gemara, then you should know it's Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha. And whenever you have an agadta that it says Rabbi Yitzchak says such and such, you should know it's Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas. Okay. Going back to advice from the Chachamim, Amar Rav Abba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Mishmei de Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, Echol Botzel v'Shev Batzel, eat onions and you'll be able to sit in the shade. In other words, if you eat cheap food, then you'll be able to live in the shadow of your house. You won't end up having to sell your house because you ran out of money. So in other words, it's advice. In other words, learn to live cheaply, and that way you'll be able to live. That way you'll be able to live without problems. V'loy techol avs in v'tanegol. And on the other hand, don't eat geese and chickens. V'hei libcha roy defalecha. And then your heart is going to pursue you. In other words, you're going to be used to eating fancy foods, and you're going to constantly want to. And eventually, you're going to run out of money. Also, he says, p'chois mi mechlach mi mishtiach, reduce the amount that you spend on food and drink, v'toisif al dirasach, and add to your dwelling. In other words, if you're this way, you'll save money on food, and you'll be able to enlarge your house and make it nicer and furnish it better and whatever, which also means, Ben Yehoyada points out, it means beruchnius as well. Your real house is your place in Olam Haba. So therefore, so spend less money on food and drink for yourself and give more to tzedakah and use more for mitzvahs. And that way your house in Olam Haba will be much bigger and better. Ki Asa Ula Amar, when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, he said over a similar thing that they said in Eretz Yisrael about the danger of getting used to eating rich foods, and on the other hand, how good it is to learn to live on plain foods. Masla Maslin B'Maraba, they would say the following mashal in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, De Ochil Al Yosa, somebody who regularly eats alya, which is fat meat. Alya literally is the fat tail of an animal, but bechlal, it means bederach klal, it means fat meat. Toshi be'ilisa, eventually, alisa, it's a play on words, eventually he will have to hide out in the attic because when the storekeeper is going to come and demand new pay up for what you bought on credit, and he's not going to be able to, and therefore he's going to have to hide out in the attic in fear from the guy. Yeah, if he comes with a butcher's knife, yeah. On the other hand, de'ocho kakuli, a person who is used to eating vegetables, kakuli is a type of vegetables, akikli de'mosa shochiv, he'll be able to lie by the garbage heaps of the city, meaning a public place where everybody is always going by. He has nothing to worry about because he's not going to owe anybody money. So therefore he can live comfortably. Okay. Now we finally get to talking about the Seder. We started this perek about Arve Psachim. We spent 15 blot over here talking about different ins and outs related to that Mishnah and different digressions. And now we're finally getting to the order of the Seder. Mishnah says, Mozgul loy kos rishon. They pour for him the first cup for Kiddush. Now, this Lashon Mozgul loy, they pour for him, is Bepashtus talking about the Balabais. I mean, everybody else has to also be Yotze Dalad Kosis, although we talked about at the beginning of the Perek that Tosfos says maybe not, maybe only the Balabais is responsible to drink Dalad Kosis and the other ones not so much. But anyway, the expression Mozgul loy means they pour for him, or they mix it for him. So there's the idea, in other words, that Derech Cherus, he shouldn't be pouring himself, therefore others should be pouring for him. So there's the Veltashim Minhag, that when you don't have servants, then everybody pours for each other. That's not our minhag, because then what are you accomplishing? Then yeah, you're treating the other person like a free person, like a ben chodin, but you meanwhile are acting like an eved. So our minhag is everybody just pours for themselves. If you have avodim or meshosim or whatever, then yeah, you can have them pour for you, but not just to have your own family members do it. Okay. Well, this is okay, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. So now you have a general machloikas, which is not just on Pesach, but throughout the year, when you're making Kiddush, what is the order of the first two brachas? Beis Shammai says, first you make the bracha for the day, so the bracha of Kiddush, in other words, Asher Kiddushanam v'tzvayis v'ratza banu, or Asher bracha banu mikolam, v'achakach mevorach al hayayin, then you make the bracha on the wine. We do the opposite. Basil says, first you make the bracha on the wine, bar priagofen, then you say the bracha asher kedushanam mitzvaysav. We have a nusach before, but that's not brachas. Those are psukim and things. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan. We learn in a braisa. Dvorim shebein beshamer besil besoda. There's a number of machlokas, and there's a whole perek in brachos, the eighth perek, that deals with a series of machlokas in between beshamer and besilo in the halachas of what to do during a meal. The first one of them is beshamer ayim mevorach al yoyim v'achakach mevorach al yayin. Beshamer says first you make the bracha on the day, the bracha of Kiddush, and then you make the bracha on the wine. Why in that order? First of all, only because of the day are you bringing wine. If it wasn't Shabbos or Yom Tov, you wouldn't be starting your meal with wine. You'd be starting with making hamotzi. And a second reason, number two, also the day began, Shabbos or Yom Tov began even before you brought the wine. So therefore, it's only right that you should make the bracha on the day first and only then on the wine which was brought afterwards for Kiddush. Which, by the way, of course, if you're making Kiddush on bread, and we've learned earlier in the Perek that most Rishonim say you can, then the first reason doesn't apply. And in fact, the Tzlach says that's Taka why, because Shammah has to bring a second reason, because their first reason wouldn't always apply. If you're making Kiddush on bread, then it's then you're not, then anyway, your meal always begins with bread. So therefore, they had to bring the second reason. Ubis says, no, you make a bracha first on the wine, then you make a bracha on the day of Yom Tov. Also for two reasons. Number one, only because there's wine are you saying Kiddush. If you didn't have wine or bread, then you were already, you were already Yotze Kiddush on a Daraisa level by saying Vayichulu. So therefore, now the fact that you have to make Kiddush on wine, according to most opinions, is only Drabanan. And why are you making Kiddush now again, after saying Vayichulu, Uliyu and Shul, is only because you have wine. If you didn't have wine and you didn't have challah, then you wouldn't be making Kiddush now. So therefore, it's only right that the bracha on the wine should come first. When we say Vayichulu in Shmona Esrei, then according to many Rishonim, on a Daraisa level, we're Yotze Kiddush. Yes. So that's one reason. Dover acher, another reason, birkas hayayin tadira, or birkas hayayin ena tadira. Another reason is because the bracha on wine is more often, because every time you make kiddush and havdalah, and every time you do mitzvahs that involve a cup of wine, you're always saying the bracha bor priagofen. And birkas hayayin ena tadira, the bracha on the day, on Shabbos or Yom Tov or whatever, is not as common, because only you only say it sometimes. Therefore, tadir, v'sheina tadir, tadir koidim. So whenever you have two mitzvahs where one is more often and the other less often, then you always do the one that's more often first. The Rashbam brings from the Gemara in Zvachim, we learn it from the fact that the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that the Korbanos Musaf take place after the Korban Tamid, and it says, asher la'ola satamid, because the oila is a tamid, because it's constant, therefore it comes first. So you learn from that, tadir v'sheina tadir, tadir koidim. Fine, but the fact is, we're not talking about things where it's optional. We're not talking about, for example, yes, you could be drinking wine every day, but we're talking about, when we say todder v'shede todder, we're talking about in terms of mitzvahs. In terms of mitzvahs, you have the bracha on wine for a mitzvah is more often because you do it every Shabbos for twice for Kiddush and once for Abdullah, every Yom Tov, every time there's a wedding, every time there's a bris, etc., etc. Whereas hamotzi, yeah, you have on Shabbos, but you don't have a halta v'savata, it's not a mitzvah. If you eat, then you have a mitzvah to bench it. Okay. And the Braisa continues, V'hilchsa k'divrei Bais Hillel, the halacha is like Bais Hillel. Now, we're going to ask soon why we have to mention that, because we know that halacha is always like Bais Hillel. So first, my dover acher, why does Bais Hillel have to mention a second reason? Now, Bais Shammai mentioned two reasons, but they didn't say it as if it was two reasons. They said it as if it was one long thing. Bais Hillel is mentioning before their second reason, dover acher, like the reason we gave is not enough. We have to give a second reason. What's wrong with their first reason? So the answer is v'chitema, because if you only had their first reason about shayayin gom l'kiddush shata'amar, that why you're making kiddush only because you have wine, you could argue back that, on the other hand, fine, you have a reason to put the bracha on wine first. But hasam tauti v'hachachada, but Bais Shammai has two reasons for their shita, you only have one reason, so therefore their reason, their two reasons should beat your one reason. Therefore, Bais Hillel had to say, Hachanami Tardi, therefore, Bais Hillel had to say, no, we have a second reason as well, Tadr Vashayna Tadr Tadr Kaidim. Okay, now we say the halacha kedivrei Bais Hillel. We say the halacha is like Bais Hillel, so pshita, isn't that obvious? The Hanafik Baskel. We know that a Baskel came out and said that the halacha is like Bais Hillel. So the Gemara answer is, Iboy Sema Kodim Baskel. Number one, maybe this Braisa was composed before that Baskel. So when Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel were still arguing, so therefore the Braisa had to point out, in this particular case, the halacha is definitely like Bais Hillel, because they were the Roiv. But in other cases, they had to wait for the Baskel to determine. Another possibility is it was after the Baskel. Rabbi Yeshua, he or Braisa would be according to Rabbi Yeshua. Dama ein mashgichin b'Baskel. Rabbi Yeshua says in the famous story of Tanu Shalach Noi that we don't listen to a Baskel. So according to him, the fact that the Baskel said the halacha is like Bais Hillel is not good enough to establish that the halacha is always like them. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua would hold, in fact, that if a person wants to follow Bais Shammai even after that, he'd be allowed to. Now, the halacha is not like him, and that the halacha is that the halacha is like Bais Hillel in most places, and you're not allowed to follow Bais Shammai. But Rabbi Yeshua, but our Braisa could be according to Rabbi Yeshua. So Tosfos points out, so Taka, what's the difference that in the story with Rabbi Eliezer, in the story with Tanu Shalachnoi, we say we don't listen to a baskel, and the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. How come over here we say we do listen to a baskel, and the halacha is like Besilo? So Tosfos says the difference is that really what the baskel is doing over here is to reinforce what we already know should be the halacha. Bishilo was the majority, and we know Achri Rabban Lahatis. The only reason why there was ever a Hava Amina to think the halacha should be like Bishamai is because, as the Gemara tells us in Eruvin, they were very sharp. They were very sharp. They had that good explanations for what they were saying. So therefore, you could argue that maybe that beats Bishilo's Roiv. So therefore, you need a Baskel to say, when you're saying Achri Rabban Lahatis, you're doing the right thing. But in the case with Rabbi Eliezer, the Baskel was coming to contradict what we know is usually the rules in halacha, because Rabbi Eliezer was a das yochid and everybody else was arguing against him. So that kind of Baskel, we don't listen to. Next, the Mishnah continues. Hey, viu lefanov, they brought before him metabol b'chazeres, and he dips in chazeres. So now the ad shemagia lepaperes hapas, until he reaches the dessert that's with the bread. Now, though, you have 8 words in the Mishnah over here, and you have probably almost as many explanations of those words as the number of words that we just said. So let's try to explain. First of all, the heviu lefanov, the Rashbam says that it means they brought that after Kiddush, the next thing is they bring him vegetables for karpas. On the other hand, Tosfos says, no, then it would say heviu lefanov chazeres, or heviu lefanov yirakis, or whatever. So rather, Tosfos says heviu lefanov means they bring the table. Because remember, in those days, they had those small tables individually for each person. So the rule was, usually you would make Kiddush, and then the table would be brought in. So that's what they would do over here, is that they would bring in the table with the karpas on it. So nowadays, that we don't have those kinds of small tables, what we do is we have the Seder plate is set before Kiddush, but what we have is the matzahs are covered. Like we learned earlier in the Perek, various reasons why the challah or the matzah has to be covered during Kiddush. So that would apply over here also. So that's the heviu lefanov. Metabol b'chazeres. Now the word metabol literally means to dip. But both Rashi and the Rashbam say that that it doesn't actually mean that you have to dip it. It means, practically speaking, as we find in many places in the Gemara, when they ate in those days, the normal way of eating was to dip it in some kind of condiment. So therefore, the Mishnah and the Gemara often use the word metabol to mean eating, even if you're not actually dipping it. So according to them, it just means that you're supposed to be eating some vegetables at this point, not necessarily that you have to dip it. If we say that you're dipping it, then what are you dipping? So what are you dipping it in? So the Rashbam says you dip it in charoisis. Rashi and the Rashbam say you dip it in charoisis. Tosfos says that, Rashi says that you dip it in charoisis. The Rashbam says, no, you don't dip it in charoisis. Charoisis is only brought later, which we're going to have later in the Mishnah. So Rashi says you dip it in charoisis. The Rambam also writes like that, by the way, that Kaipras is dipped in charoisis. The Rashbam says, no, it doesn't mean in charoisis. And Tosfos agrees. Now, Tosfos says that what it is it you should dip it, because we're going to say that you want it to be for a hecker. The whole point is you want to stimulate the kid's curiosity. So therefore, you do have to dip it, but it doesn't have to be in charoisis like Rashi and the Rambam says. It can be in vinegar and salt water, which is, of course, what we do. We dip the karpas in salt water. We say b'chazeres. Now, chazeres is one of the species you use for maror. So it doesn't mean you have to use chazeres. Rashi and the Rashbam explain what it means is that if you have no other vegetables available, then at this point you eat chazeres. But if you have some other vegetable available, better you should eat that, because like the Gemara is going to say, the mitzvah of maror only comes later on in the Seder. You don't want to be eating maror now prematurely, and then what? You've already eaten maror and you've already had your fill of it, and now you're going to eat it later, l'shem mitzvah. It's not right. So therefore, better you should be using some other vegetable. But yes, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that if a person has no other vegetable available that they can use for karpas, then yes, at this point they would make eat a small amount of maror, and then they would make a bracha hadama and eat a small amount of maror, and then later on they would eat it in its proper place in the Seder. So we're eating vegetables now because that's also going to be that that is karpas. We're talking about karpas over here. We're saying we want to do it in order to stimulate the kid's curiosity. So again, according to Rashi, it doesn't and the Rashbam, it doesn't davka mean that you have to dip it. Just practically speaking, they would dip their food in some kind of condiment always. According to Tosfos, and this is how we do it, you're supposed to dip it because the dipping itself stimulates the kid's curiosity. The next words, ad shemagil parperes hapas. So parperes, one meaning of parperes means a dessert. So it means, in other words, Rashi and the Rashbam explain what it means is eventually you're going to be reaching the chazeres, the morer, which you're going to be eating after the matzah. And in that sense, it's sort of like dessert. Like you eat matzah, which is the main thing of your meal, and then you eat morer, which is almost like a dessert. Obviously, it's not because you're still going to have shulchan aruch, but in that sense. So in other words, the point is that later on you're going to be eating maror, but now at this point in a seder, you're supposed to be eating some kind of vegetable, ideally something which is not maror, but if you don't have anything else, then you eat maror at this point. Either way, the point is, kadesha yakir tinek v'yishal, so the child will notice something unusual and ask, because after all, you don't usually eat vegetables before the meal. So therefore, that'll stimulate his curiosity of why we're doing that, and that'll lead him. And then the God to Levincha is supposed to be. You're supposed to tell the Haggadah in a question and answer form. So like this, by him asking that question, eventually he'll ask the other questions, and you'll be able to answer. A different explanation of parperas apas is the word the lefarfer means to break. So the word is lefarfer es hapas. Before you break the bread, which is yachatz. So in other words, when do you do kaipas? Before yachatz, which you have to have a broken bread because it has to be lechem oni. It has to be lechem oni. And the Gemara is going to tell us later on that an oni eats usually a half a loaf, not a full loaf. Yeah, this is a save for later on. So half we save for the afikoman, but yeah. In fact, by the way, the Rambam holds that you only have two matzahs by the Seder, even though he said usually you need two full loaves for Lechem Mishnah, but on Pesach night, you only need one and a half because of Lechem Oni. So according to him, you start out with two matzahs, you break one, you put half of one away for the afikoman, and you're left with one and a half matzahs, and on Pesach night, that's good enough for Lechem Mishnah. Everybody else disagrees with the Rambam on that and says you need two full matzahs, which is why we have three matzahs by the Seder plate. That way, after we break the one for Yachatz, we have two whole ones left. So according to the Rambam, do we have Kohen and Levi or Levi Yisrael? Okay. Next. I mean, you know, it's long before the Rambam that there's the concept of having three matzahs. They asked, I think it says that they asked Reb Shura Goin why there's a minhag to have three matzahs. And he said, because it corresponds to the three saw of flour that Avraham told Sarah to prepare for the Orchim, because that was Pesach. And then he gives a couple of other reasons as well. Yeah. Okay. Onward. So anyway, so parperas hapas has two basic meanings. It can mean the morer that you eat after the matzah. It can also mean before you break the matzah for yachatz. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Hey, view the fun of matzah v'chazeres v'charoises u'shnei tavshilin. Then at that point, they bring to him, again, on the individual tables that they had in those days, matzah and chazeres, morer, and charoises, and shnei tavshilin, and two cooked dishes, to represent the Gemara is going to explain, they represent the Korban Pesach and the Korban Chagigah. Now, by the way, Tosfos actually explains. Now, according to Tosfos, earlier in the Mishnah, we said, hey, Viru Lefonov already meant they brought the table. So what's the hey, Viru Lefonov again over here? According to Rashi and the Rashbam, that hey, Viru Lefonov meant that originally they only brought out the Kaibas, then fine, now they're bringing out the rest of the Seder plate. But according to Tosfos, that they already brought it out before. So what are they bringing out now? So Tosfos explains, before they get to the main part of the Seder, before they get to Magid, they remove the table. Then that makes the kid even more curious that what's going on over here? Why are we removing the table when we haven't even had the meal yet? And the father is going to answer him, you know what? We're going to bring back the table to dip again. And then the kid is going to ask, Halayla azesh shtei pa'amim, why are we dipping twice? And that will lead into the questions of Manishtana. In other words, because you have there's an interesting question they always ask. You know, when the kid says in Manishtana, Halayla azesh shtei pa'amim, how does he know we're dipping twice tonight if he's only seen one dipping so far for Kaipas? So according to Tosfos, that answers the question, because the father is telling him, you know why we're bringing back the table now, not because we're going to eat yet, but because later on we're going to do another dipping before we get to the main part of the meal. So now he already knows there's going to be two dippings. So now he knows what to ask. Anyway, so it's again, nowadays that we don't have individual tables, then we accomplish that by covering the matzah. We uncover it for Halach Manya, then we cover it again before Manishtana. And the idea is the same idea. The kid should be curious. Why are we covering the matzah like we're done with the meal? when we haven't even started the meal yet? And then the answer, yeah. Okay. So afal pi she'ein charoisis mitzvah. So even though charoisis is not a mitzvah, nevertheless, you still have to have it on the Seder plate. The Gemara is going to eventually ask. We're going to learn. Tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So if it's not a mitzvah, then what's the purpose of bringing it? Rabbi Lozab ben Tzadik, I'm a mitzvah. Rabbi Lozab ben Tzadik says actually charoisis is a mitzvah in itself, as we'll see in the Gemara. When the Bis Mikdash was standing and he bring the Korban Pesach, then at this point, besides the other things they brought out for the Seder, the matzah and the maror and so forth, they would also bring the actual Korban Pesach out and have it on the table. They needed it. You know, you have to have matzah and maror on the table during the Haggadah because you have to be able to say matzah zu shonu eichlin, maror zeh shonu eichlin, and we say in the Haggadah b'shoshi yesh matzah maror menachon lefanecha. You know, we say, unfortunately, we don't have a Beis Mikdash yet. So we have to say, Pesach Shehoyu Abiseinu Uchlam Bezmanche Beis Mikdash Chayim. In the time of the Beis Mikdash, they would lift up the Korban Pesach as well and say, Pesach Zeh She'onu Uchlam Al Shulma. So therefore, you have to have it on the table in front of you when you're going to be saying the Haggadah. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Amar Shlokish, Zois Emeris, since was this that we see in the Mishnah, that you have to dip twice, that you have to have motor twice. Now again, the Mishnah had used the expression metabol b'chazeres. So we said it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have chazeres. Ideally, you have some other vegetable. But if you don't, then we said you have chazeres, you have motor that first time, when it comes to kaipas, when it comes to the thing of kaipas in the Seder. And then later on, you have it after the matzah. Now, the second one is what you're really going to be yotze, the mitzvah of morah with. So we see from that, says Rish Lakish, zoytze meretz mitzvah tzviches kavana. You see from this that mitzvahs require kavana. In other words, when he eats the first time, and suppose that the only vegetable he has is morah, and he's eating that, then he might not have had in mind to begin with that he's being yotze morah with that. Because after all, at that point, he didn't say alachilas maror. He only said bura pri hadama, like you say for regular vegetables. So therefore, so we can't say that he was yotze the mitzvah yet. Now, by the way, we say that you have in Shulchan Aruch discusses the question: how much karpas should you be eating? You have yesh omrim that you should eat a kazayas. The Rambam writes that, for example. On the other hand, yesh omrim that you don't, and davka you eat less than a kazayas, you're not obligated to because you're only doing it in order to make the kids wonder what's going on. And adrabba, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you eat a kazayas of it, then you get into a problem. Do you have to make a bracha achron on it? And then the question is, are you going to have to make a bracha rishona again, or you have to make another bur pri adama when you get to the morrow? So therefore, in order to avoid that whole issue, is why we davka eat less than a kazayas. What? So one second. You wash for because it's not dvorim aborim machmas asuda. Because not you don't normally eat morer as part of a meal. So therefore, you might have to make a separate bracha on it if you didn't have in mind and you made a bracha achrona after the kaipas, and that's why you don't. But in the Gemara over here, we're assuming even let's say you did eat a kazayis the first time around, so you could have been yotze. But Rish Lakish says unless you actually had in mind to be yotze morer at that point, then you're not yotze. So therefore, since you may not have had in mind because you didn't even say the bracha alachas morer at that point, then you're not yotze. Kiven deloy beiden chiyuva de morer hu de ochilei. Since you're not eating it at the time when you chayev to eat morer, because the primary time to eat morer is going to be after matzah. Because after all, the pasuk says al matzas umrurim yechlu in that order. So therefore, b'bura pri hadama hu da'achalei. You're only saying the bracha b'bura pri hadama. So you may not have had in mind to be yotze morer, and therefore, Rish Lakish says you're taka not yotze, even if you ate a kazayis of it, even if all you had was morer, and you're eating that at this point in the seder, and even you ate a kazayis of it, still you're not yotze if you didn't have kavana. So you may not have had in mind to be yotze the mitzvah of morer. Hilkach boil mehdolat boli l'shem morer. Therefore, you need to again later on dip morer in charoses and eat it for the sake of the mitzvah of morer. Because Rish Lakish says the isach redach mitzvah leboya kavana. If you're going to argue that mitzvahs don't require kavana and you're yotze either way, lamalach treiti boli. Then in that case, if you didn't have a separate vegetable for kaipas and you're using maror for kaipas as well, then why would you need to dip twice? Why would you need to dip it twice? You already dipped it once after kiddush. So after kiddush, so then at that point you would be yotze. The fact that we're saying you're not yotze and you still need to eat some more later in the seder shows that mitzvah tzrichas kavana, says Rish Lakish. But the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation? Dilma la'olam mitzvah.
Alexander.
Yeah.
Outside of this mitzvah of kavana or not kavana, if you don't have karpas to begin with, do you have to say achilas maror and bari peri adama on the maror?
So the answer is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you only have maror at this point, you don't say al achilas maror at this point, because the mitzvah of eating maror is really supposed to be after matzah. So at this point, you eat a little bit of it. You don't eat a kezayis, and you don't eat a kezayis. In general, you don't eat a kezayis of karpas, but then later on in the Seder, so you say Bar Pri Hadama, you eat less than a kezayis of it. Then later on in the Seder, you make Alachelas Maror, and you eat Maror in its proper place.
So basically, you replace the karpas with a less than a kezayis.
Basically, you replace karpas with Maror in a case like that, right? Now, ideally, you don't do that, because the Gemara is going to say later that, look, it's not really right that you should be eating it ahead of time. The whole point is you want to have that you're eating it the first time for the mitzvah that you're accomplishing, rather than just lachmiya tinoikis. So you do have to have something else. You have the idea that the Rishonim mentioned that ideally you should use the vegetable actually called karpas, which is why we have in the Simone Aseder, it's called karpas. Really, karpas is parsley or celery or some vegetable related to that. And there's the famous idea, which kids always bring home for the Seder, that karpas represents samach perech, backwards, samach is 60 riboy, 60 times 10,000 Jews who were enslaved in Mitzrayim, and perech is hard labor. So therefore, the word karpas itself represents that. And therefore, that's the ideal thing to use. We are noyeg, as we know, to use potatoes or onions. Practically speaking, that's probably the only vegetables that they could get in Russia in the olden days at this time of year. But minig avosenu biyodeinu, and therefore we do that. The Velt, many people in the Velt do use celery or parsley or something like that. I've even heard of some people who use bananas. The idea is it's supposed to be something that's bore pri hadama and can't be used for maror. So bananas are hadama. Yeah, so different.
Here we use
salt water vegetables.
Yeah. In Crown Heights, we use onions or
potatoes. Yeah, what?
Or potatoes, right?
Yeah. Okay. Onward. So the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation of the Mishnah, what Rish Lakish is saying, that mitzvah tzriches kavana, and therefore even if you ate chazeres the first time around, you weren't yotze. Dilma la'olam, mitzvahs ain't tzriches kavana. Maybe really mitzvahs do not require kavana. Or deka'amet treti buli lomali. So you're asking then, why do we need to dip twice? The answer would be because we want to have a hecker for the children. We want to have that. We want to have two dippings before the main meal in order to. In other words, the Mishnah is. In other words, the question was, why is the Mishnah specifying the case where you don't have a different vegetable and you have to use chazeres both times? Doesn't that show that mitzvahs ain't tzriches kavana? No, maybe the reason the Mishnah is mentioning that case is to stress that even in that case you need two dippings, not because you weren't yotze the first time around, but because you still need lachmiya tinoikis, you still need to make the children curious, and therefore you need two dippings. So that's what the Mishnah is stressing. So in other words, the stress is not so much on the fact that you have only maror. The stress is that regardless, you always have to have two dippings. Not because you weren't yotze the first time, but because without two dippings, you don't have the kids' curiosity is not stimulated enough. So you would say in that case, then why does the Mishnah have to specify that you only that you have chazeres the first time around? It should mention other vegetables. And the answer would be Iashmein and Shau Yerokas, because if the Mishnah had mentioned other vegetables, Havamina, you would have thought Hecha de Ika Shau Yerokas would be in and Treti. Maybe when you have other kinds of vegetables, then you need two dippings. Avo Chazeres Lachodo Leiboi Treti Buli. Maybe Fakeut, you would say if you only add Chazeres, you don't need to dip twice. In other words, the exact opposite of what Rish Lakish had said. Rish Lakish figured the Mishnah is Davkin and mentioning Chazeres to say that no matter what, you always need two dippings of it because you weren't Yotze the first time. Maybe Fakeut, maybe if the Mishnah had mentioned Shau Yerokas, you would have inferred that if you only have Chazeres, you taka only need to dip it the one time, and you yotze that first time. So therefore, kamash malanda afilu Chazeres, boin and treti buli. No, therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that even if all you have is Chazeres, you still have to dip it twice, ki heichid lehebe behekeir lechinoikas, in order that children should recognize, should see that something unusual is going on, and ask Manishnan. V'oid Tanya, also, now also we learn a braisa Also, we learn a braisa that addresses this point, that where we see, we're going to see from this braisa that mitzvahs ain't tzriches kavana, which on the contrary. So we're saying our Mishnah, not only does our Mishnah not necessarily support what Rish Lakish is saying, but we can even show there's a contradiction to him from a braisa. So v'oid tanya, ochlan d'may yotza, if you eat moro from d'may, then you yotza, because as we learned earlier in the Masechta, conceivably a person could be mafkir their nechosim, and then they're able to eat d'may, so it's not considered a mitzvah ba b'avera. Ochlan b'loy miskaven yotza, and the braisa continues, if you eat it without kavana, then you yotza. So we see not like Rish Lakish. And the braisa continues, ochlan machatsoyin yotza, if you ate it a half at a time, you didn't eat the full kazayas at a time, you're also yotza. Uvovadshala yisha ben achila l'chavata yotza m'kadeh achilas pras, as long as you don't take from the first eating until the second more than kadeh achilas pras, which you have many different opinions among the poskim what kadeh achilas pras is, all the way from 2 minutes to 11 minutes. The majority opinions are somewhere between 4 and 9 minutes. Some Tzedek writes in a couple of different places in his Truvas and his Chedushim 6 or 7 minutes. There's even an opinion that the Magen Avraham wants to say that the amount of the time of Kedei Achilas Pras is not a fixed amount. It depends on the type of food. Matzah would have one shear, Mora would have a different shear because one is easier to eat than the other. Anyway, so the point is this braisa contradicts Rish Lakish because it says mitzvahs ein tzriches kavana, and Rish Lakish said our Mishnah is telling us that mitzvahs tzriches kavana. Now, fine, Rish Lakish has the Mishnah on his side, but again, the Mishnah is obviously talking about a case where you don't have other vegetables, only murder. So not necessarily, and we said it's not necessarily a proof for Rish Lakish. So the answer is tanoi. The answer is it's actually machloikas tanoi. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi, I'm afa pishatibo b'chazeres. Rabbi Yossi says that even if you dipped chazeres already the first time in the meal, mitzvah lahavi the fun of chazeres v'charoises or shnei tapshilin, there's still a mitzvah to bring in front of him chazeres and charoises and the two cooked dishes. So you see that Rabbi Yossi holds mitzvah tzuchas kavana. So even you ate chazeres the first time, that's not good enough, and you need to eat it again. Our Mishnah could be like that. And then the Braisa that we said, Ochlan, the one is Kavan Yotza, would be a different mandomer. So Rish Lakish has Rabbi Yossi on his side. So the question still is Vakati, but still Mimai, who says that's what Rabbi Yossi means? Dilma Kasava Rabbi Yossi mitzvahs ain't tzriches kavana. Maybe Rabbi Yossi still holds mitzvahs ain't tzriches kavana. V'hai de'be'in t'shei tibuli. The reason why you need two dippings is like we said before, ki heichid to have a keila tinoikis, in order that the children should realize something unusual is going on. So how do you know that means he holds mitzvah tzriches kavana? The answer is imkein my mitzvah. The fact that Rabbi Yossi uses the expression mitzvah implies that it's something more than just to stimulate the kid's curiosity. Mitzvah implies that you actually yotza the mitzvah only when you eat it, the kavana, which would be the second time after you eat matzah, and therefore that means Rabbi Yossi holds mitzvah tzriches kavana. So Rish Lakish has Rabbi Yossi on his side. So it is actually a machloikus in a few other places in Shas, whether mitzvah tzriches kavana or not. And there's actually a machloikus about it even in Shulchan Aruch. And Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions. The mechaber says that the opinion that mitzvah tzriches kavana is the primary opinion. So therefore, we say that if you do a mitzvah without having kavana at all, then you're now there's different levels of kavana. There can be, for example, let's say you're mechaven to eat this thing or to hear this shofar or whatever, and you're not having in mind all the kavana selyodim and whatever. You're still yotze with that. But if you had no kavana at all, like you didn't even realize this was matzah, or you didn't realize that was a shofar or whatever, then you're not necessarily yotze. So the same thing over here. If you're eating the moro, not having in mind, earlier in the Seder, not having in mind that you're going to be yotze, the mitzvah of moro now, just you eating it in order as an appetizer, lakmiya tenoikus, then you're not yotze, and then that's why you later, that only later on in the Seder, do you make the bracha ala chalas moro, and you actually eat the moro. Okay.
It seems incredible that we need the karpas or the maror to awaken the children's attention when the whole seder is completely different from anything we do throughout the rest of the year.
Well, actually, not so much. I mean, you think about it. Kiddush you always have at the beginning. Karpas is the first unusual thing, and together with karpas goes urchatz, because you're eating vegetables dipped in a liquid and you have to wash for them, so fine. So that's the first unusual thing. You have to think of it. You're looking at the Seder as a whole, but you have to consider, the kid is supposed to ask Manishtah at the beginning of Maggid, because Maggid itself is supposed to be an answer to his question. So by that point already, you need enough unusual things. So therefore, so you have by eating karpas, and like Tosfos says, by taking away the table, or as we do by covering the matzahs, that's enough to stimulate his curiosity. And then he starts asking the questions. Yes, later on, of course, we do other unusual things, but those are going to be only later. He hasn't seen those yet.
And you're telling me that reading the Haggadah is not unusual. We do that throughout the rest of the year, and that would not awaken his curiosity.
The Haggadah is an answer to his question. The Haggadah is an answer to his question. You need a question first in order to answer Avodah Mayunim.
We would read the Haggadah without his question, wouldn't we?
No, absolutely not. There has to be questions. And in fact, the halacha is, if there's no one around, we're going to learn it in a day or two in the Gemara, that if there's nobody around to ask, you actually have to ask yourself the questions. You are obligated. Let's say you're making the Seder by yourself, you have to say the questions, Manishtana Alaylaza, and then answer with Avodah Mayunim.
So we're reading the Haggadah just to answer the question, Manishtana Alaylaza?
I mean, we're reading the Haggadah because we have a mitzvah. Well, that's what I'm
saying.
But the Gad Levincha has to be preceded by a question. The Chachamim set it up in a format that the Haggadah has to be said, and it has to be said in answer to a question.
That's fine, but that is not relevant to the fact that to awaken their attention, you don't need necessarily the karpas. You can the Haggadah would be at least enough.
But the Haggadah itself is after the fact. I think we're talking past each other. The Haggadah itself is after the fact. You already had you're starting to say Avodah Mayunim. You're starting to say the Haggadah. But then it's, I mean, obviously you still want the kid to ask questions onward afterwards as well. But you need a prerequisite question, and for that you need to have stimulated his curiosity with something that happens before that. Namely karpas and urchatz, which goes with it, and taking away the seder plate.
And from a